He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles. And as I've often said here, America deserves the Donald Trump presidency simply because the decline of integrity and morality in this country led to his election to begin with. So when my favorite sports writer, Rick Riley, uncovers 244 pages worth of legitimate stories about Trump cheating on golf courses, what, I'm supposed to be shocked? Caddies refer to Trump as Pele because he's always kicking balls. Secret Service agents are ordered to move balls out of difficult lies. When Trump opens one of his 17 courses, he immediately plays a round by himself, then declares himself the club champion. From Tiger Woods down to club pros, all opponents of Trump are subjected to his cheating. He's a bully and a blowhard and a liar, our president, who may have been cleared of colluding with Russia, but is stone cold guilty of golfing fraud. Yet, have you noticed Trump has cheated at golf forever without anybody stopping him? Thus, is it possible he'll remain the president another 4 years without anybody stopping him?
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
Basketball purists are loving this Final Four because the one-and-doners and future NBA mega millionaires are gone, vanquished by upperclassmen and grad transfers not found in the average mock draft. Think about it. How many of the remaining players will even make NBA rosters other than Texas Tech's Jarrett Culver, Virginia's DeAndre Hunter, maybe Michigan State's Cassius Winston, maybe Virginia's Ty Jerome? And yes, it's fun to root for kids who will be making their livelihoods in ways beyond the basketball court, such as Michigan State's fifth-year senior Kenny Goins, the former walk-on who hit that killer three-pointer when the celebrated Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett were coming up empty for then-top-ranked Duke. And this isn't an aberration either. We've seen freshman super teams win national titles, such as Kentucky way back in 2012 and Duke in 2015, but more often than not, it's a veteran team with a master coach that wins. It's not the one-and-doners who win. They haven't won since Duke 4 years ago. This year will be no different, and I say Michigan State and Tom Izzo have that champion look. Still, after an exhilarating round of regional finals, you have to also know this about the Final Four. The lack of future NBA star power, no Zion, no Barrett, no Ja Morant, no PJ Washington, no Carson Edwards, gives this Final Four a diluted feel. And this is how college basketball is going to look in the future, as we have seen before, when the NBA abandons the one-and-done concept and allows players to enter the league directly out of high school. Without even a year of Zion, the college game would suffer in quality and popularity as it did when LeBron James went to the Cavaliers instead of maybe Ohio State, or when Kobe Bryant went to the Lakers instead of Duke. The likes of Mike Krzyzewski and John Calipari will need new plans now instead of jet-setting their way to blue-chip living rooms. Yet that didn't stop Kentucky the other day from rewarding Coach Cal with a lifetime contract after UCLA again failing to save face as a once elite basketball program, offered him $48 million over 6 years, and he said no to UCLA. This, even though Kentucky the last 4 years, check out the records, hasn't had the spectacular results of Calipari's first 6 years in Lexington. We don't have any long-shot darlings this time, such as Loyola Chicago and Sister Jean, but we should have two very competitive basketball games on Saturday, if not classics. And you can make a case for each team in the Final Four winning a championship. This is old-school basketball with defense and character on tap. And the coaches, as usual, are the stars. Take the first game on Saturday, Virginia-Auburn. And the sentimental favorite clearly is Tony Bennett, a Christian man and Zen practitioner who can bury the misery of Virginia's abject underachievement with a national title. It's sometimes hard to watch his team play slow-paced, defense-focused slog ball. And if hot and cold Kyle Guy isn't hitting shots and Hunter isn't playing to his potential, it is possible Virginia will be gut-punched by an Auburn whirlwind that plays small and fast behind blurry point guard Jared Harper, relies on a three-point game led by Bryce Brown, and rides the emotion of its frenetic, sweating, perspiring coach, Bruce Pearl. Here was Bennett, son of the longtime Wisconsin coach Dick Bennett, trying to flip the pain of losing to a number 16 seed last season with the joy of a national title.
Oh, I'm grateful. So thankful. I'm humbled that I don't deserve all this. And how it's gone is amazing. But yeah, we've done everything but, I mean, in that, and there's still more, Final Four and then what's next. But to be able to do that as a competitor, I always dreamed of coaching in a Final Four. First year I was a volunteer manager for my dad was the year they went to the Final Four against Purdue in 2000. I remember thinking, I think I want to do this. This seems, I didn't realize how hard it was. But, you know, to have been have the years we've had, been one seeds and not be able to, and do an Elite Eight, Sweet 16, all those things, but to get to this step and hopefully beyond, it feels really good.
But now hear this. Nobody outside of Auburn, Alabama wants to see Bennett lose the Pearl. That's God losing to the devil, and if you don't appreciate that analogy, tough. Because Pearl is a flim-flam man, a cheater from way back as an Iowa assistant in the 90s when he taped a conversation with prospect Deion Thomas, sent the tape to the NCAA, and got Illinois in trouble when Thomas, to this day, says Iowa and Pearl tried to buy him off and that his grandmother never trusted Bruce Pearl's smile. Yet, because of his infectious personality, Pearl always has received new chances in coaching. Most people would be buried and dead, not Bruce. He was hired at Auburn after he was fired at Tennessee for a blatant NCAA violation, and when one of Pearl's Auburn assistants, Chuck Person, pled guilty to bribery in the ongoing FBI-led investigation of the sport, Auburn gave Pearl a 5-year extension. Go ahead and cheat. Pearl is the symbol of college basketball today. Scummy as hell, yet still entertaining, to the point he says Adam Sandler should play him in the Bruce Pearl movie. Look, we want Bruce Pearl's moment to last maybe 2 more hours, tops, because in a country with enough lying and deceit, we don't need Pearl in the national championship game. You might as well have him play golf with Trump and see who cheats the most. Am I being too tough on Bruce? Look at his record. Here was Pearl, whose team has beaten 3 blue bloods, Kentucky, North Carolina, and Kansas, to reach a place where Auburn never has been. And nobody ever said this man can't coach and motivate. He just cheats.
Could I ask one favor?
Sure.
Could you say the very first part of what you said when you introduced us? Do you remember what it was?
Yes. Yeah, the Auburn Tigers going to the Final Four are with us.
Thank you, sir.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
It sounds great. Just thank God for the blessings. We thought this was going to happen. I knew this group wanted to make history. I knew they wanted to play good basketball. And I knew they wanted to represent Auburn. The other student athletes on our campus that compete for championships. And to do this in such an impressive way against the best teams and coaches in college basketball makes it even more rewarding. But we understand that we've got two more games to play in order to win a championship, and we're going to try to continue to focus on that.
Amazing how that Boston accent, which never goes away, works way down there in Auburn, where it helps to have super alum Charles Barkley rooting for you on the CBS studio set. But again, how does the NCAA and Auburn University allow a coach who cheats to reach the Final Four? Just asking. I guess it's for the same reason the POTUS is allowed to cheat in golf. I keep going back to that analogy, Trump and Pearl, Trump and Pearl. Virginia does defend the three-point shot better than almost any team in the country, and at some point Auburn will miss its best player, Chuma Okeke. So I'm taking Virginia, good beats evil. Thank God we cannot have Bruce Pearl in the title game. I can't say it enough. The second game, which was supposed to be primetime Zion, featuring an intriguing matchup between Michigan State and Texas Tech. Ignore that Tech brand name, please, because more importantly, that program is coached by Chris Beard, Fear the Beard, the hottest coach in the sport, and he combines tough love discipline and long, harsh practices. That's part of his Bob Knight pedigree, yes, Bob Knight, with unabashed support of his players, something never associated with the Knight regime, the Ogre regime. That's what Beard has done so well. He has taken the best of Knight and left alone the worst of Knight. Mike Krzyzewski did the same thing once upon a time. Now, Beard, unlike Coach K, is an absolute character. He plays to the media with his love of Whataburger, that cheap franchise chain, Whataburger, Texas. I think there's one down the street from me here. I've never gone. He has those fireside chat TV shows, and he pleads to the students to attend games in the football mad country of Lubbock. This is blue collar as a blue blood, and I love it. Beard misses the days of cramming eight in a room on road trips during his community college coaching days, and he'll still turn down a $4.99 buffet in Tulsa because it doesn't offer a soft drink. And he's a man who has paid his dues with 12 coaching jobs, 12. He's only 4 years removed from Division II Angelo State, but this man can coach defense. He grinds down the pace, and Michigan State is not exactly loaded with offensive talent. I'm rooting for the Beard. Fear the Beard. I don't think he's going to win the game because counterpart Tom Izzo is in his eighth Final Four, and Beard is coaching his first. But here was Beard, very respectful to Izzo. He almost seems in heaven being here. He addresses that discrepancy here, and he does it with typical humor on ESPN.
Well, everybody keeps saying that, but I've been to like 24 Final Fours, you know. Now, I was drinking draft beer in the lobbies. This is the first one I get to coach in, but I've been to the Final Four.
Texas Tech is paying Beard only $2.8 million annually. I say only because that ranks 30th in the field of 68 tournament coaches. So the Tech big bosses had better be anteing up quick here unless they want to lose him to Arkansas. I would say Arkansas isn't that good of a job. It is in the SEC, and they will probably double his salary. UCLA should have been waiting for Beard, too, but they opted instead for Jamie Dixon in a program no longer elite. They should have waited for Beard. Beard would have played well in Southern California because he's fun. He's an entertainer. Jimmy Kimmel would have him on. Nobody's having Jamie Dixon on a late-night show. He's a solid basketball coach. Oh, boy. Then there's the 64-year-old Izzo, who was excoriated, and rightfully so, when he continually berated and then lunged at freshman Aaron Henry earlier in the tournament. At the time, I said Izzo had not evolved with the times, unlike another former hothead, Coach K, and that he'd better learn to play nice in this day and age. His team responded with a resounding run, and now Izzo is smelling his second national title, his first coming 19 years ago. I will have a commentary on Izzo later on Unmuted. He says he needs this championship to validate his career, and while he is no stranger to the Final Four, He is correct if he wants to separate himself from the other one-hit wonders.
I'd say they're right, you know, because I need to validate it for me. I don't need to validate it for them. I have my own goals and dreams, and I have my own aspirations of what I want to do. And what I want to do is put Michigan State University in rare air. Two national championships by the same school starts to separate you from the 40-some that have won one. And three national championships for the same school validates it even more. I keep talking about it puts you in a smaller fraternity. And but you know what? It's listen. I've learned that people that question you are going to question you. The haters are going to hate you. All I got to make sure I do is what's best for my team and the university I work at, and I'm going to do that each and every day. And it really, 5 years ago, fire and brimstone in me would have wanted to fight that person. Now I want to say, you know what, you're right. And I don't want to say it to get him off my back. I want to say it because if that's your goal for me, I promise you my goals are bigger than your goals. Just like I'm sure that your goals for yourself are bigger than the ones I have for you. And what's neat about my job is I get to take things that are players' goals and I get to push them past what they even dreamed they'd be, because they're not experienced. They're not as old as us. They're just starting their dream. They're just starting their journey. And I get to help mold that journey. And hopefully, if you demand a lot and you get a lot, that's going to improve that journey as that individual goes on in life. And maybe he'll be a better president of a company. Maybe he'll be a better NBA player. Maybe he'll be a better father, you know.
Michigan State was led to championships by two point guards. One, a Hall of Famer named Magic Johnson. One, an also-ran named Mateen Cleaves. Might the steady Cassius Winston be next? Izzo's Final Four experience, I think, will trump Beard's lack thereof. So I say chalk. Michigan State versus Virginia on Monday night. As for Zion Williamson, as many as six shoe companies will be bidding for his services, including Nike, which issued him the shoe that exploded back in February. Zion is likely going to pass LeBron and Kevin Durant as the highest-paid rookie sneaker endorser ever, with the draft lottery upcoming, and I say it will be rigged for the Knicks. The league always finds a way to rig it for big-market teams who really desperately need something to kickstart the operation. Knicks, Zion. You can write that in, okay? And Williamson is expected to play in the FIBA World Cup this summer in preparation for the 2020 Olympics. Yep. You don't think Greg Popovich wants Zion on the team? This won't be like Christian Laettner with the Dream Team sitting on the end of the bench. Zion will get serious minutes in 2020 after his rookie NBA season. LeBron, who rejected Reebok for a guaranteed $87 million over 7 years from Nike back in 2003, would love to have Zion in his agency with his buddy Rich Paul. What, you haven't noticed that LeBron is a movie producer first, an agent second, and a playoffless basketball player third? Here is LeBron on Zion.
I've never tooted my nose up or had anything to say with the comparisons to me and Zion and Zion to me. I think it's great. I think it's great for the game. You know, with his athleticism, what we all see, his ability to jump up well beyond the 10-foot rim is incredible. I think what's also incredible is at his size, his speed, his agility, his quickness. And then to add on to that, I think he's just a great kid. Every time, you know, the media has asked him questions, he's always been right on and very humble about it. He's humble about the fact that he gets to play the game that he loves every single day. And I love everything about him from the outside looking in. I've never met the kid, but I love everything about him. And he keeps the main thing, and that's the game of basketball.
And if you wondered why Bryce Harper was worth the free agency fuss and that $330 million, consider yourself reminded. His return to D.C. has been spectacular this week. It's been riveting theater, the very drama baseball lacks these days. And Harper played up that villain's role so well with the flair and the attitude and that epic bat flip, all of which makes him the sport's most polarizing figure. But he's such an entertainer. They booed him in D.C. with all the venom in their lungs, ignoring his very gracious thank you on Instagram earlier in the week. And when he struck out his first two times against former teammate Max Scherzer, they roared in D.C. They mocked Bryce. But when Harper had the last laugh with three hits, including a 458 home run that he crushed near the Washington Monument, the folks kind of went home early and quiet with their heads up their asses, realizing that Harper got the best of them and their team. Yes, this is why the Lerner family screwed up royally in giving Harper a watered-down deferral-filled offer after calling him into the manager's office last fall. Of course, when Bryce saw all the deferrals, he rejected it on the spot. These deferrals extended decades from now. And then when the Lerner son and dad met him and his wife in Palm Springs, the offer was reduced to $250, and there were more deferrals. They were just insulting the guy. Of course he was going to turn it down. Aren't the fans bright there? D.C., nation's capital, big-time universities, smart people in the populace there. But they're booing Bryce Harper when they don't realize he's rejecting owners who gave him insult deals. You don't give somebody an offer and then reduce it by $50 million and then add on to the deferrals. No wonder Bryce held out. And I'm glad he got his money. And now you're seeing why baseball so desperately needs him and why he's worth every penny. The Phillies guaranteeing that $330 million over 13 years. And while the Harper experience has been fickle in terms of performance with MVP highs and slump-ridden lows, so far he has embraced that pressure in demanding crazy Philadelphia for a ball club that looks primed to win the National League East and compete for a pennant. Here was Harper, who stole the show in his old ballpark, saluting the beer-guzzling Philly fans who made the trip and drowned out those depressed Nationals fans who should have been booing their owners, not Harper.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a tough bat going to, or it's always going to be a tough bat going up against Max. You know that. Threw me two, 2-2 changeup, nasty, and then 3-2 cutter. They threw me as well. That was absolutely nasty. So I knew going up there that third at bat, I got to get a knock off this guy because he's going to text me and wear me out. Just going up there, just trying to stay within myself, stay in the game as much as possible, not really worry, like I said, about my surroundings. I feel like it's a little different coming back here and getting booed, but for me, it's exactly like going to another ballpark and facing somebody that's lights out electric like Max, if that's DeGrom, and going to New York and getting booed. It's the same thing for me. So I go out there and just try to play my game, understand that I have teammates in that dugout that are going to pull for me every single day. I have the city of Philadelphia behind me each and every night, and if I have that, then you know nothing else matters to me.
Being in the same division, Harper and the Phillies will be visiting Nationals Park three times every season. So at some point, Nationals fans will have to move on from this. But what a wonderful story this is becoming. And Adam Jones again is calling out a fan, this time for, quote, cussing me out, unquote, as he ran down a fly ball in right field in San Diego. Jones, now playing on the cheap for the Diamondbacks, actually had ballpark security remove that fan in his hometown. But unlike his protest against racist comments at Fenway Park 2 years ago, you remember that, this episode did not involve the N-word, but did, according to Jones, involve the B-word and the F-word. Still, I think he's right here. When MLB wants to have a family atmosphere at the ballpark, you can't be using this kind of language. They should be tossing the fans. But why does Adam Jones have to be the enforcer everywhere? That's two ballparks now. Where is security? Where is Major League Baseball? Why am I always asking that question about topics across the board? Where is Major League Baseball? Where is the commissioner? Make Adam Jones the commissioner. Last podcast, I made Bob Costas the commissioner. Now, Adam Jones. my new commissioner. And baseball always can use some good gossip to fuel social media, and Ron Darling, of all people, has provided it. The TNT broadcaster also broadcasts Mets games, wrote a book that accused his former Mets teammate, the lunatic Lenny Dykstra, of firing racial language at Boston pitcher Dennis Oil Cam Boyd before Dykstra's first at-bat in Game 3 of the 1986 World Series. Dykstra called it a lie and said he'll be suing Darling, who will need witnesses, by the way, one of which won't be Boyd, who said he is hurt by the claim, but that he never heard the epithets. Some of Darling's former teammates, including Doc Gooden and Kevin Mitchell, also said they never heard it, though Dwight Gooden was probably high out of his mind at the time. Darling skewers everybody in this book. He goes to places that break the holy clubhouse code. It reminds me of Ball 4, the Jim Boughton book, way back when. Ron Darling decided to write the new Ball 4. He wrote about Kevin Elster's sexual conquests. He wrote about the 90s Oakland A's and steroids in the clubhouse. He wrote about how Gary Carter would have his own kids punch their dad's name on thousands of All-Star ballots. And he wrote about how Billy Bean would go by aliases when they were trying to pick up women in the minor leagues. Ron Darling let it all hang out. He's just making enemies everywhere. But you know what? We're talking about it. This is the one I love. He makes fun of his former broadcast partner, Frank Thomas, calling Frank a whiner, that is correct, who made such a fuss during a cold day in Denver that the producers told Thomas to go buy a coat on the network's dime. So Frank did just that, according to Darling, buying a $12,000 fur coat. Frank, a parka works. A $500 parka works, Frank. North Face, Frank. No, Frank Thomas has a $12,000 fur coat. Thomas, of course, denying that. He is seeing a pattern here. But look, speaking from my own experiences with Frank Thomas in Chicago, I can tell you, he is a baby, a big baby with a big-ass diaper. Some of his critics, not me, because I thought it was sexist, called him the Big Skirt. Remember, Hawk Harrelson called him the Big Hurt. The Big Hurt! Then you'd see fans calling him the Big Skirt in the front row at the ballpark. Frank made the Hall of Fame first ballot. He made the Hall of Fame on his platform of I never use steroids. Okay, I agree with that. I don't think he did because he was just big and fat and he oftentimes was eating too many hot dogs, and Ozzie Guillen once told him, put down that damn hot dog in the clubhouse, which I visited back then before they all threatened me. These are great Mariotti asides here. Anyway, Frank Thomas should not have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's a terrible fielder, ends up getting in mostly as a designated hitter, and on top of it all, he was a big baby, and now he's doing those supplement commercials. They have a new round of them out now where he tells the guy, hey, the ladies will love it. At least they've amended that a little bit. Before, it was just so cheesy. Now it's like, hey, dude, the ladies are going to love you on supplements. Frank, you're not supposed to be touching supplements. Anyway, a Mariotti aside, I believe Ron Darling, who stands by his story about Lenny Dykstra. Ron Darling, I think, is a straight shooter. I think all of the aforementioned targets in the book are kind of dubious. Here was Ron Darling on ESPN's Get Up with Mike Greenberg.
Well, it's interesting. I've also got a lot of texts and phone calls from other 86 members that have said they got my back. I don't know. I don't want to get in a tit for tit with everyone. This was the 1980s, the bench jockey and stuff that went along in those days was sometimes obscene in nature. And I heard what I heard, and I put it in the book for a reason. And, that's where I'm at. I mean, I don't know how else to respond to it. And I guess as we move forward, we'll figure out how to do that.
So certainly when you look at Lenny Dykstra's criminal record and his drug history, you're not believing Lenny. Low ball, as some of this stuff is, it's actually good for baseball, which usually sticks to that clubhouse code, never leaks any juice out. I think it's good for the game. Keep the stories coming. We want the truth about these a-holes. And extension fever continues in Major League Baseball as the owners have effectively killed free agency with their cold war against all but the elite free agents. You've noticed the pattern here the past two off seasons. Clearly, the new economy is this. The very best players in their 20s, including Ronald Acuna in Atlanta, who's only 21, are rewarded for the long term for performance or potential or both. But the riches suddenly dry up for players once they hit 30. This could lead, and probably I think it still will, to a labor impasse in 2021 because in any strike vote conducted by a union, every player's vote counts as one. And if you're going to have this one percenter baseball economy, most players voting are going to be petrified that their salary structure will be downsized. That's what's happening right now. The owners are playing with fire in a sport that is now fourth in the American consciousness. Again, a Mariotti aside, one, the NFL, two, the NBA, three, college football, four, baseball. Sorry, you've dropped below college football. Once the national pastime. That's why the owners are playing with fire here. And it's interesting how so many players are jumping at the extension money and locking themselves up when they could have gained much more in free agency. Simply, they don't want to have to deal with the collusion tactics we've seen from the owners. What the players are doing is they're locking in, and I think that's more evidence that we're going to have a lockout or a strike before you know it, because they're going to try to make as much money as they can before baseball tries to kill itself, which is what will happen if there is an extended layoff of baseball. You cannot have another work stoppage like 1994. This time, baseball will not survive. I will issue that warning once again. And the Baltimore Orioles have no reason to exist with a team that might win 50 games this season. So why did new manager Brandon Hyde pull pitcher David Hess in the seventh inning despite having a no-hitter and having thrown only 82 pitches? Come on, give the fans of Baltimore a reason to care and give that poor kid a shot at history. Come on. And the Cubs have started poorly with a flawed bullpen, errors galore, and another bad start by bust free agent Yu Darvish. Manager Joe Maddon, I'm afraid, is going to take the fall here if the Brewers and the Cardinals make the playoffs in a tough NL Central. But you know what? The great Theo Epstein also should be held culpable. He's the one who threw money at Jason Hayward. He's the one who threw money at Yu Darvish and Tyler Chatwood. And he's the one who left the bullpen without a legitimate closer. Yes, I know Theo will be a Hall of Famer, having busted two all-time curses in Boston and Chicago, but since winning that World Series at Wrigley, Theo has been the bust. The Cubs are a wreck these days from the top down, as the Ricketts family shows moral and ethical cracks. Might Theo Epstein eventually be looking for a new franchise to fix? The NFL is a Teflon monopoly, as you know by now, having survived existential crises, including, but not limited to, brain trauma, player conduct, and racial protests. And now the idea of a spring league filling in the dead season is gone as well, with the Alliance of American Football suspending operations in its first season. The TV ratings weren't bad, with some games drawing 500,000 viewers, but the business model was shaky from the start. Of all people, Johnny Manziel, the voice of reason. This might be the last we ever hear of Johnny Football on the field, but in a tweet, he offered sound advice to fellow AAF players to, quote, save your money and keep your heads up, unquote. However, it's hard to do both when the players were forced to pay for their own travel home. And you can't say Eminem didn't try to help. Yes, Eminem, the rapper, apparently a fan of second-rate pro football, says the league would have succeeded if fighting among players was part of the game, like, you know, hockey. Eminem, come on, don't you have some chops to bust in a studio somewhere? Whatever happened to Eminem? And the quieter it is in the Arizona desert, the more likely the Cardinals and their new innovative coach, Cliff Kingsbury, will use their number one overall pick on quarterback Kyler Murray. This means the Josh Rosen trade market will be hot and heavy. And among those interested, these three teams, Patriots, Chargers, Giants, three teams that eventually will need to replace older quarterbacks. The Giants make the most sense for Rosen. He could replace fading Eli Manning this season. But you think Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers going anywhere? Not yet, despite Brady's April Fool's Day tweet to the contrary. And a warning should be issued here about Rosen. He's too cocky to sit on a bench in an Aaron Rodgers role. Brett Favre, remember that? For too long, Rosen's not going to just sit there and play behind Eli Manning. He's going to say, start me, and it'll be a back page headline. So the Giants better be careful. Unless, of course, John Gruden finds a way to maneuver for Kyler Murray. Incumbent Derek Carr is concerned in Oakland, tweeting a photo of himself doing the Robert De Niro watching you gesture. Clearly, Carr doesn't trust Gruden, nor would I in that situation. Another quarterbacking factor to consider, and this is real, it's whether the Seattle Seahawks cede to Russell Wilson's April the 15th deadline for a new deal. It's no secret that Wilson's wife, the singer Ciara, would prefer to be in New York for her career than Seattle, but the Seahawks normally don't do extensions a year in advance, so if Wilson says on April the 15th that he will not be signing in Seattle, then maybe he will be traded to the Giants, and that could impact where Josh Rosen shows up. You don't think Tom Brady would throw a fit if Josh Rosen is in the quarterbacking room every day? I think that would be Belichick's way of motivating Brady. Does Brady really need motivation? I think he does. He's kind of proved he doesn't need motivation. Bill, leave him alone. What do you want from the guy? And for now, I emphasize, Odell Beckham Jr. is thrilled to be in Cleveland. That could change the first time Baker Mayfield throws to another receiver or misses Beckham in the flat, but save this piece of audio anyway with OBJ overjoyed to be joining a potential powerhouse offense featuring his former LSU teammate Jarvis Landry.
Of course, if I wanted to be anywhere else, I'd be playing alongside my brother. Like, this is, like I said, since the day we met, we talked about, all right, I'm going to the same school as you. You know, where are we going? He had different offers. I didn't have all the same offers he had. But it was like, where are you going? I'm going there. Like, this is, and I tell people all the time, I was like, he made me who I am today. Like, he's taking me to a level of this greatness, this legendary stuff that we talked about. It's because of him. So, I mean, there's no better place for me to be but here.
And Saints coach Sean Payton, an offensive guru himself, oddly, is slamming NFL franchises for copycat coaching hires. Everybody wants the next Sean McVay, the next offensive guru, and Payton, an offensive guru himself, says teams are pigeonholing hires. To me, it sounds like Payton is still mad that McVay and the Rams beat his team in the NFC title game, tainted as that loss was by an all-time bad officiating call. At least the NFL budged a couple of weeks ago, heeding the criticisms of Payton and the media by allowing replay for pass interference calls. Finally, the NFL budged, and they should have done it immediately, but there was actually disagreement on this. Of course, the NFL should have been proactive and approved replay for such calls long ago, before the city of New Orleans had to deal with more heartache. And Aaron Rodgers continues to be a lightning rod for criticism, with new Packers coach Matt LaFleur saying he has yet to meet with Rodgers. What? While former Packers coach Mike McCarthy did not attempt to hide his disdain for Aaron in criticizing Packers management for how his dismissal was handled, Rodgers has become quite the diva, and it might not end well for him in Green Bay after creating dazzling moments for years. To the NBA, where LeBron James and agent Rich Paul not only ruined the Lakers season, but that of the Pelicans, because they swung and missed on an Anthony Davis trade New Orleans has been forced to deal with a lame duck Davis the last several weeks. Poor New Orleans. That, you know, being screwed in the NFC title game and then this Anthony Davis fiasco. Once known as a humble and down-to-earth star, Davis has been poisoned by the LeBron Rich Paul Kool-Aid. And the other night he flipped off a Pels fan, saying on social media that the fan disrespected him, Anthony, by agreeing to let Rich Paul make that trade demand. You brought on the hate yourself. And reports continue to swirl that Kevin Durant already has decided to sign with the Knicks. He's going to love that. He would do so for several reasons. One, he never has felt totally comfortable in a Warriors culture where Steph Curry is God. And two, he wants to show his critics that he can take a rock-bottom franchise and elevate it to a championship level, which would happen immediately if, say, the lottery is rigged, Zion Williamson comes to New York, and Kyrie Irving joins Williamson and Durant. Suddenly, the Knicks are a super team. Could that happen? I would not dismiss that possibility. And you know what? We're going to know where Zion is headed first. If Zion is heading to the Knicks, I say Durant and Irving are there right with him. All the more reason this league could rig the lottery. And as we await NBA postseason seedings, it's possible the Warriors will be drawing Oklahoma City, not a favorable matchup in terms of emotion, because you know Russell Westbrook will be trading verbal volleys with his frenemy Durant, and those OKC fans will be in full cupcake mode when it comes to Kevin. So it will be incumbent upon the Warriors to keep their cool, but that's an issue for this team when Draymond Green, Durant, and Boogie Cousins have these running battles going on as we speak with NBA officials. The other night with a 21-point lead against Denver, Durant was ejected for complaining. Why? It was just no reason to complain. You're up by 21, so what? And he was ejected. Kevin's got some temper issues. We're getting too close to the playoffs. They're only 2 weeks away. Tell you what, the Warriors would much prefer to play the Spurs, but Greg Popovich keeps getting thrown out of games. I don't know what Popovich is doing here. Is he trying to help his buddy Steve Kerr by losing games and slumping down to the number 8 seed? Or is he trying to fire up his own team? I'm going to give Pop the benefit here. It has been a rough period for him, losing his wife and then having to deal with the Kawhi Leonard defection. I don't know. Why is he ejected early in the last two games? I don't understand, but he's not actually throwing these games, is he? I would lose all respect for him. He's coaching the 2020 LV team. You can't be throwing games by getting yourself tossed. Can't be doing that. Right now, the only sure playoff matchup is Boston-Indiana in the East. And if the dysfunctional Celtics lose that series, you can say goodbye to Kyrie and hello to Anthony Davis. I think Boston might be saying hello to Davis anyway. Danny Ainge will make that trade, and Davis will be in Boston next season, at least. And if the Lakers do fire Luke Walton as expected, they'd better be damned sure they have a sound replacement. There is no certainty of that, by the way. Ty Lue, who has been helping the Clippers locally as a coaching consultant, is expected to be the front runner because of his relationship with LeBron and their championship success together in Cleveland. But Lue had health issues after winning an NBA title in Cleveland. Imagine how missing the playoffs in LA in the final years of LeBron might make him feel. That could put him in the hospital. I don't want to see that happen. There is also talk of the younger Juwan Howard, an assistant coach in Miami when LeBron was with the Heat. He might get the job here, but he has no head coaching experience. He has no idea what he's getting into. Is LeBron going to push him around? All I know is this Walton soap opera is getting old for a front office looking more dubious by the day. Jeannie Buss doesn't know what she's doing. Rob Pelinka is hated around the league. Magic looks like an idiot. And there's Luke Walton. Why are you firing Luke Walton? Just make the call one way or the other, please. And I'm going to say this once more. There now have been 23 horse fatalities at famed Santa Anita Park outside of L.A., and the issue should not be whether the track should be shut down or whether the sport will continue in California. No, the issue is why horse racing would have the audacity to stage the Kentucky Derby in a few weeks, celebrating with mint juleps and big hats as if this mass continuing tragedy never happened. The Hall of Famer, trainer, and face of the sport, Bob Baffert, put it best in a New York Times interview, quote, "This is our March Madness, but we're having the wrong kind of madness now. We feel like we're all under the gun. We should be under the gun. You can't defend a horse getting hurt," end quote, Bob Baffert. I'll leave it at that. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, does it bother you that the President of the United States so flagrantly cheats at golf?
Jay, golf's a hard game. So, you know, have I ever cheated at golf? Now, I think I'm pretty good at golf, but it took a lot of work to get good. And along the way, I cheated sometimes. You know, maybe a stroke here, a stroke there, a mulligan here, a mulligan there. So who am I to call somebody out? Now, many have tied in that the president cheating at golf somehow means his morality is shot. If you needed to correlate him cheating at golf with the other statement, well then people, I don't know how to help you. Him cheating at golf, I think that's the least of our worries.
And Chris, the final four upon us, very simply, who wins?
Jay, like I said before, I want Auburn to go all the way. I'll take Michigan State and Auburn. I know maybe even the more romantic pick would be Auburn and Texas Tech. I feel like I've never cared about a Final Four less, because that's just how I feel. Maybe it's the lack of blue blood. I mean, you got Michigan State, that's a blue blood. But I don't know. Just, I really don't care. I'll watch it. I guess rooting for Auburn just to see Charles Barkley smile and Bruce Pearl sweat up the court. Let's do it, Jay. I'll take the Auburn Tigers all the way.
And Chris, when Bryce Harper, your guy, signed with Phillies for $330 million, you said you love the hair, you love the flair, but you also decried that amount of money. You said it was absurd. Yet, as you watched Harper Theater unfold in D.C. this week, was it not obvious that for dramatic flair alone, Bryce is worth the money in a very drab sport in which too many star players exude too little personality?
Well, considering Mike Trout, the other well-paid guy, is what, I think before tonight's game, 1-5 are the Angels, and I haven't seen one Mike Trout highlight. Actually, I saw one screenshot that a buddy sent me of him taking like a deep, exalted breath out on the field, realizing that his team was about to lose their fifth game, and nobody pays attention. So in that sense, is the money to Bryce worth more because we get the highlights, because we get the hair, because we get the smiles, the bat flips, all that? Sure. And in a business where money just seems to be falling from the sky for no reason, because all I hear about, all we talk about is that baseball's dying and it's a boring sport and people don't watch it anymore, but yet there's plenty of money. So in that sense, is Bryce worth it because it gives us something to talk about? Sure. Will that be the same 5 years from now? Granted, 5 years after that, so 10 years from now when those deals are just coming to their end? I would think not, but who knows, Jay? Who knows? Maybe the money keeps falling in the sky. Maybe as people get older, here's the little secret we didn't know, Jay. As people get older, they find comfort in baseball. So when I'm 50 years old, I'll watch every baseball game from beginning to end because that's just what you do. And last thing, Jay, I apologize for my voice. I'm still stuffed up. All those rains in Southern California, they brought a lot of sinus issues for some of us.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Evidently, I should not be concerned about Stephen A. Smith's flurry of factual errors because Stephen A. is in line, reportedly, to become the richest on-air personality in ESPN history. Yep, he makes more than Woody Page. I'm just shocked by that. Shocked. With estimates for his next deal in the $10 million a year range. At least Stephen A. gets ratings. Most of these debate shows, now including my former show Around the Horn, no longer get good traffic. And the ratings they get certainly aren't anywhere near the numbers when I was doing Around the Horn for 8 years. Yeah, I'm cocky about it. We had 1 million a day. They're now down to like 200,000 a day. Why weren't they paying me $10 million a year? My numbers were 3 times what Stephen A's are. What's the going on here, folks? One such failing show there, it's called High Noon, which quickly was removed from its noon slot after it debuted, which doesn't bode well for its future. The hosts of that show, two immature goofs named Pablo Torre and Bomani Jones, tried to pull a prank and invite ESPN colleague Will Kane as a fill-in host on April Fool's Day. Oops, that did not go well.
The first words I gotta say to you, Will Kane, thank you.
I think the first words I'd say to you, Pablo, are, you're welcome.
I needed a co-host, and you are that co-host.
This is nice. I mean, look at this set. This place versus what they're running across the hall at First Take.
Oh, yeah, we got nice, solid plastic here.
I've always felt, Pablo, that you and I would be a really good show together, that this was meant to be.
Mm.
In fact, did you know that the main character in the movie High Noon, his name is Will Kane?
No.
I mean, when was this going to happen?
A regular Gary Cooper is sitting across from
us. Get on with the future.
We got names, our first.
Got you. What do you mean, got me?
April Fool's.
Yeah. This joke's on me, huh?
Yeah, man, you still get paid. There you go.
So I'm really not doing the show?
The plastic is real, though. Real, real stuff.
You guys have me on, you jerks won't have me on as a joke.
Next time they have you all, it'll be the day I quit. Our first name for real is Duke. Wow, the chair is lower.
Kane claims he was in on the joke. I don't think so. He was that mad at the end. I think that's a backstab move, and I just wanted to show you what this business is like. It's filled with weenies and assholes like Pablo Torre and Bomani Jones. Country singer Jake Owen is among many who thought the Phil Mickelson-Tiger Woods pay-per-view match was a sham. And a day later, at Jordan Spieth's wedding, Owen approached Phil and said he wanted his money back, calling it, quote, the shittiest golf I've ever seen. I second the motion, by the way. So Mickelson took a wad of $100 bills out of his pocket, put one down at the wedding, and said, quote, I won 90,000 of these things yesterday. Take a 100 and go bleep yourself. I'm with Jake Owen on this. For somebody so beloved by fans, Mickelson can be quite the ass. The backlash, by the way, hasn't stopped Tiger from planning a series of head-to-head matches on Golf TV, a live and on-demand video service. It might help Tiger if he challenges for a green jacket next week at the Masters, because if he misses the cut, why would I watch him play head-to-head on Golf TV? And I'm sure they're going to be charging, and sorry, no more pay-for-play for guys who can't win majors. I started reading a story about the holistic spring training of the Seattle Mariners, not just yoga and meditation, but candlelit rooms, food tables of quinoa, enchiladas and kale hash browns, mental skills coaches, fastballs fired from a pitching machine suspended 30 feet in the air, bookshelves including titles such as Ego is the Enemy and The Power of I Am. And then I just looked at the standings, and the Mariners are 7-1 starting the season. Might this new age BS break the longest playoff drought in North American sports? And proving once again that he's the, what, 8th, 9th, 10th wonder of the world, Keith Richards is not the Rolling Stone having heart surgery this week. That would be Mick Jagger, whose single stent insertion means I have to wait until later in the summer to see the Stones at the Rose Bowl. Richards has ingested every drug and inhalant in life's vast laboratory, including the cocaine he mixed with his father's ashes. I am not lying, it was in his book. Yet Keith is the one wishing Mick well in the hospital? I will never understand this world. Never.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
So now Tom Izzo has done it. He has reached another Final Four after that ugly coaching moment 2 weeks ago when he berated and lunged at freshman Aaron Henry in a disturbingly maniacal sideline moment. His critics are now saying, hey, Izzo's methods work, because here's Michigan State, two victories from a national title. Come on, those arguments would be shallow and very simplistic, because Izzo is too good of a man and too good of a coach to resort to caustic 1970s Bobby Knight madness. Izzo should have evolved through time, like the reformed tantrum thrower Mike Krzyzewski, and with the traditional methods of discipline at a crossroads in sports. Izzo's cause and effect lunacy is not a good look or a good lesson. Tom needn't act like a caveman to be an effective leader of young men, and the same goes for Auburn's Bruce Pearl, who can go ballistic on a player for no apparent reason at any time. We are in 2019, gentlemen, when the best coaches, such as the ascendant Chris Beard at Texas Tech, can conduct long, tough practices while still exuding love and support. And the concerns involve more than men's athletics. The women's coaching staff at North Carolina has been put on leave pending review of alleged abuse in that basketball program, and the staff at Northern Kentucky is being investigated for what former players call a toxic environment. I like the attitude of UConn legend Gino Auriemma, who has raised his voice a few times but has won a championship many times. He says most coaches are, quote, afraid, unquote, of their players these days because of what they might report as abuse. That's good, because what once was categorized as tough love in the 20th century is now roughhouse bullying, period. And if Izzo does win a national title, he'd better not be hailed as the throwback coach whose screaming act has been validated. If so, I'd prefer he not win the national title, and that a calmer soul, such as Virginia's Tony Bennett, is the one hoisting the trophy on Monday night. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever, ever, ever let anybody mute you in life.